We've been talking about the drive to independence, about how many nation states are splintering or eroding, borders being redrawn all over the world. But that's just the beginning. Establishing a national identity, a collective set of ideals, morals, beliefs, that takes years, decades even. You could say that the work of nation building is never really done. Halima Shah has been thinking about that after a recent trip to a country close to her heart, Pakistan.
I went to Pakistan for the first time in 12 years. I went as a kid. My parents were born and raised there, and then they had me in the U.S., where I was brought up. And when I went back this time, it was my first time there, one, as an adult, and two, as an American journalist. Anyone who visits has a pretty good chance of seeing Charing Cross. It's the center point in the city, this major landmark in Lahore and for Pakistan. It's always kind of been this point where there's a lot of political rallies and marches. And a few months ago, there were actually motorists complaining that there were so many sit-ins at Charing Cross, it was hard to even get anywhere. I encountered it when I was actually covering International Women's Day. There was a march to Charing Cross. It was also a site for darker things. There was a bombing nearby in 2017. It has a really interesting history, too. When you go to the square, you see this marble canopy. And for a long time, in the 1900s, there was this enormous bronze statue of Queen Victoria. It was a statue of her wearing a widow's veil and an apron, and it looked like it was bigger than, like, the actual Queen Victoria.
Well, she was little, so.
Yeah, exactly. The statue's gone now. It came down in the 1950s, and it was placed there in the early 1900s.
The height of the British colonial period.
Exactly. And I thought, okay, well, this is a country that eventually became an independent country and wanted to shed its colonial past. I was wondering if she had been melted and turned into something else. I talked to Ali Osman Qasmi. He's a historian of modern South Asia. And one of the things he told me was what ended up happening to Queen Victoria's statue.
It's been moved to Lahore Museum's basement.
She's in the basement?
I know what it sounds like, but it's still available for public viewing.
Colonial era monuments, some of them were removed from public viewing, some of them were shipped off to England, and some of them are still in Pakistan.
Now, what you see at the center of Charing Cross, under this marble canopy, is a bronze replica of the Quran.
That's a monument which was built to commemorate the Islamic summit, which took place in 1974, to celebrate the general feeling or aspiration which was there in Pakistan to bring about some kind of unity among Muslim countries.
So you have to keep in mind that Pakistan was founded as a haven for Muslims in South Asia. When the British Raj came to an end, the partition took place. The region was divided into two nations. There was Hindu-majority India and Muslim-majority Pakistan.
But the partition was deeply traumatic.
It was extremely traumatic. It was the largest mass migration in human history. And in Pakistan, you're always a stone's throw away from a story about a relative who was kidnapped on the road, or someone who might have died, or someone who might have seen these trains with tons and tons of dead bodies. The memory of this time is so alive.
Wow. Does your family have personal memories of that time?
Yeah. My grandmother is from the partition generation. She was a student at the University of Punjab around that time. She was very supportive of the two-state solution. She was, you know, one of many student protesters who was arrested for civil disobedience and jailed for a while and later on released. And then my mom is from that first generation to actually be born in present-day Pakistan. and she and my father both left the country and built their lives in the United States. I'm that third generation that feels some tie to this country, but at the same time feels like something of a foreigner in it too.
Yes, please.
This is my mom and me having breakfast.
Do you feel at home when you come back to Hawaii?
You're quite at home. The faces are like you, the dress is like you, the food is like what you eat.
I feel kind of like a foreigner still.
You probably do.
But you still feel comfortable.
Feels like this is me. It's like your bedroom. You've been away for months and you come back and it's still your bedroom.
Even though this isn't your childhood home?
No. The country is like your bedroom.
Do I hear tea being poured?
Yeah. I didn't have to eat because I had like 6 cups of tea a day. Every single time you go to an interview in Pakistan, people are very hospitable and they pour you tea.
Sounds like you and your mom are going back and forth between English and Urdu.
Yeah, Pakistani Americans do that a lot. But then when you're in Pakistan, you also will notice that English is sprinkled a lot into Urdu conversation. And I think that's partly why I was somewhat curious about Charing Cross. You start to see certain relics of British influence in day-to-day Pakistani life, and you start to wonder what happens to the British past? What happened to the Indian past? What happens when you get your nation state? What happens after that point?
There's a typical post-colonial situation.
This is Tahir Kamran. He's a historian who's studied Pakistan and Lahore's political history.
All the post-colonial states and societies, when they're in the need of constructing their own narrative, anything antithetical to their native sense of nationalism have to be removed.
Like Queen Victoria statue.
The very presence of Queen Victoria, who was not Muslim, who was no longer alive, you know, according to diehard scholars or clerics of Islam, she represented Christianity. Her statue had no business to be perched there at Charing Cross.
When I asked him about the statue at Charing Cross, he actually went much further back to the founding of Pakistan. And what he basically said was that this country, it was built on a really futuristic vision. It wasn't necessarily rooted in the past.
As you know, of the many races, creeds, and religions that inhabit the vast subcontinent of India, there are 2 major nations, the Hindus and Muslims.
This is a speech from Pakistan's founding father and first leader, Muhammad Ali Jinnah.
We want the division of India into Hindustan and Pakistan because that is the only practical solution which will secure...
Jinnah didn't make any allusion to history while he was launching a struggle for a separate state for the Muslims.
But freedom must mean freedom both from the British exploitation and Hindu domination. 100 million of Muslims will never agree merely to a change of masters.
So are you saying that Pakistan was really struggling with what does it mean to be a Muslim nation? Do we want to be a Muslim nation? Are we a nation that's very friendly to Muslims? Or are we an actual theocracy?
Those questions are still being asked. You talk to Pakistanis and everyone seems to have a different answer sometimes about what Pakistan was supposed to be when it was seen as a haven for Muslims. Was it supposed to be a secular vision for minority groups in the country, many of whom were Muslim? Or was it supposed to be a theocracy? Or was it just supposed to be this country that had a lot of Muslims in it? And you'll get varying answers. So let's go back to the 1970s for a second. Pakistan is a new country, and the country has a prime minister. His name is Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, and his administration is getting criticized and is being called irreligious. So I talked to Amjad Abbas Khan about this. He's a political scientist who's also based in Lahore.
Unfortunately, in Pakistan, you see that religion is mostly used for political gains. So to appease and to win the support of that class, he posed himself as the torchbearer of Muslim unity and Muslim Ummah, and as the leader of the Muslim world.
So he aligned himself with major Muslim majority countries, and he held this massive summit in Lahore. One of the people he invites is King Faisal of Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is this oil-rich Gulf country, so there is a geopolitical benefit to doing this too. And to commemorate this summit, he placed a bronze replica of the Quran at Charing Cross, and then Charing Cross gets renamed. It's called Faisal Square, but also no one calls it that.
So this Quran sitting there is not actually so much a religious artifact as it is a political artifact.
If you believe Amjad Abbas Khan...
Basically, it was politically motivated.
Outside the world of politics and large monuments and political parties, you were there hanging out with your mom. More tea?
Yeah, oh my God, tea every day, all the time.
Did those questions of sort of what is Pakistan come up at all?
Absolutely. I think one of the common experiences with a lot of immigrants is that the country is one way when you leave it, and then when you come back, it's not exactly as it used to be. And I think one of the things that shocked my mom when she went back was that Iqbal, who is this poet and philosopher who is considered the spiritual founder of Pakistan, his poetry was so ubiquitous during her childhood, and kids used to recite it every morning before school.
Zindagi shamma ki surat ho khudaya mere. Dur duniya se mere dam se andhera ho jaye. The darkness of the world goes away. Make my life like a candle. Ye meri dua hai ki make my life like a candle so I can cast away the shadows of this world.
And she was having a conversation with some of my cousins, and they didn't seem as aware of Iqbal and his work as she was, or as people of her generation were.
Iqbal ki jo poetry hai, it's a philosophy of life, a recognition of who a human being is.
And how about you? I mean, what was the emotional impact for you of the trip? I mean, we've talked about intellectually how you began to kind of think more deeply about Pakistan's political history and national identity. Did it make you feel more Pakistani or more separate?
I think I've just always identified with a third category. I think oftentimes this question is asked of first-generation Americans, are you more X or are you more Y? Are you more Pakistani or are you more American? And it's kind of like such a false binary. What I've always identified as is Pakistani-American. So home is not in Pakistan, and it's not necessarily in certain parts of the United States. It's that space with my friends where we're kind of cracking jokes that are both drawing on the things that our parents told us and the things that are in American popular culture. To say, like, my identity is based on what's on my passport or which country I'm physically in, it's kind of a misunderstanding of what national borders are, because national borders try to keep some things out and some things in, but what they've never really been able to do is stop the flow of culture or ideas.
That's to the best of our knowledge producer Halima Shah with a story from Pakistan.